Hello and welcome to Two Fat Expats. And when we say fat, we're not talking bathroom scales or excess luggage. Two Fat Expats are all about making the most of your expat adventure and filling it up with as much as you can so that when it's all over, there's no regrets. You've lived a fat expat life. I'm Kirsty Rice. I'm an Aussie expat who's based in Doha, Qatar, and I'm joined by Nikki Moffat.
Hello.
Another Aussie, but Nikki's in Hamburg, Germany. We've lived in 12 countries between us. We consider ourselves experts in all matters of the geographically challenged. Between us, we've given birth in 6 countries, and we know what it's like to pack up yet another kitchen, start looking for another job, and wave goodbye to that brilliant hairdresser it took you 12 months to find. We've both made those first steps into the brand new office, or worse, the new school, and at times we've found ourselves jobless, friendless, and starting afresh all over again. Each week we talk to expats who are from all over the world, and we discuss our favourite finds, our biggest stuff-ups, and we get the best tips for packing it all in. Okay, are we ready to go? Let's do this. Hello, Nikki Moffat. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you, Kirsty Rice. How are you?
I'm good. Now, Nikki, I saw a screenshot on the weekend of all of your family and their different locations. It looked like you covered about 4 continents at one stage.
Well, definitely different islands all on the same continent. We kicked off our weekend by sending our daughter to play volleyball in Amsterdam. And then when she came back, we were out at our Oktoberfest celebrations. So she went straight to a sleepover party. So we didn't see her before we left for the airport the next morning, where we took our son to fly to London. And then from the airport, we drove directly to Copenhagen to drop off my husband to his new share apartment. And so then on the way back at one stage, I had a look, and one of us was in London, one was in Copenhagen, one was in Hamburg, and there was me on the ferry crossing between 2 countries on the little map. So I listen to you all the time, obviously, and I talk to you, and I totally empathize about your family being all geographically far flung, but it's totally different feeling when it was my family. I was sort of having a little bit of anxiety.
No, it doesn't sound like a big deal at all when it's someone else's family. It kind of sounds, oh, well, that's kind of interesting, and I wonder what that's like. And then when it's your heart that you're watching, you know, float across another side of the world, it's really difficult, isn't it?
Oh, it totally is. So what about you? The kids at home?
Yes, I have the opposite scenario. I have all of my children here at the moment, absolutely every single one of them. And of course, we did a little bit of a downsize over the summer because we were down to one child. So we got rid of one car. We had, you know, one of those monster cars that was like a mobile lounge room, you know, that you drove around everywhere. We got rid of that. We now have one small car and we have a much smaller house. So suddenly we had all these children home, and of course they are all very excited to see each other, and they're kind of all over each other and they can't stop touching each other, which is great until they break the bed and they're in the back of the car thumping the hell out of each other while you're trying to drive down the street. Okay, Nikki, this week it's all about the expat greenies, or more so it's all about, is there such a thing or is it a fallacy? I mean, if you're using your bamboo straws and composting, does it mean anything when you travel across the globe by plane twice a year? My kids have suggested that I need to do a Greta Thunberg and start solar sailing it to Australia from now on, which could be interesting.
If you have a quick look at the World Bank figures on carbon dioxide, metric tons per capita emission, Qatar needs all the help it can get. So maybe you should. On the green thing, we've been talking about this week. If it isn't a personal passion or something you're actually consciously aware of, where you're living as an expat in a country can really influence the way you act if you're just going along with the flow. I mean, Hong Kong, I don't even think there was recycling. I'm pretty sure there wasn't. In South Africa, we're hugely and consciously aware of food-related waste, and we really wasted hardly anything from that front. In the US, we had to pay extra to have a recycling bin collected. So that tells you something about the value of placed on recycling there. Whereas Germany, we have 4 different recycling bins just for households, and there must be public bins within X 100 metres of your building for 3 different types of glass, electrical goods and clothes.
Yeah, I think back to your original point, Nikki, about it really can depend on where you're living at the time. You know, you made a comment about Qatar and it needing all the help it can get. And I think it's that thing. It is Qatar. I think Sheikh Mayasa has just said that they are going to try and make the 2022 World Cup plastic free, which would be incredible when you see the amount of plastic water bottles that get used in the Middle East, right? It's hard to imagine how you could even do that. But it goes back to your point of, you know, where you're living affects how you personally are, because if you don't feel like anybody's watching you because, you know, hey, no one else is doing it, so why should I do it? You know, did it really happen? You know, I can remember when we were in Canada and we had this washer and dryer in the basement of our house that was the size of a large refrigerator almost. And I can remember a girlfriend arriving and looking out of our window. It was, you know, the middle of winter, and looking across at all the sort of smoke billowing out of everybody's houses, you know, as the energy consumption was like full on because it was, you know, minus 20 and we were out in the burbs, and her saying, God, I'm looking at this and thinking, what are we even doing in Australia? Do you know, because to her it was like, we do so much in Australia, but it doesn't feel like there's so much being done here. Because if you're looking from a distance, you're not maybe seeing all the people that are doing things. You just can't see it straight away.
Yeah, absolutely. And I remember in America speaking to someone about how I wash my clothes in cold water, and they always said, that's disgusting. How do things get clean? But it's just a totally a cultural thing. Yeah. You know, they couldn't imagine washing their sheets and towels on under 60 degrees. And yes. I just, to me, that was like, why would you do that?
No, they couldn't imagine not being able to wash 15 towels at once. I remember getting back to Australia and seriously going down to the local Harvey Norman, and all the washer dryers just looked so tiny compared to what we'd had in America, because, you know, we'd had a whole dedicated basement for these, or a mud room, you know, in other countries where they were massive, these massive pieces of furniture.
I know, and I feel terrible here having a dryer, because it's not common in Germany to have a dryer, whereas now I've been so seasoned by my time in apartment living. Obviously, in South Africa, everything was outside, everything was line dried, 320 days of sunshine, let's never forget that. But in the States, we weren't allowed to hang things outside because of our HOA, and here people just hang things around their apartment all the time. And I go to people's places and I think, where is all your washing? Where's it hiding? Because I know that there's so much washing to do. You can't possibly, like, what do you do? But obviously there are people that don't use dryers. So
Nikki, it all started with a post by Joss Hindmarsh, and she wanted to know what other expats were doing. Joss is in Malaysia and she'd spent sort of the past 2 weeks living through the haze. And she posted an article that was on BBC.co, I think, UK, and it showed this very disturbing photo of Indonesia that was basically red. And it was a conversation about why the haze happens. You know, is it just big corporations, but also small-scale farmers, and they take advantage of dry conditions to clear vegetation for palm oil or pulp or paper plantations by using the slash and burn method. Now, anyone who's over in that neck of the woods, whether you're in Singapore or Malaysia or Jakarta, you have experienced the haze and everything that goes with it. But it started this fantastic thread because everybody came out and said all the things that they were trying to do to sort of soften, I guess, their impact on the world. And one of the people that popped up was a fantastic woman called Victoria, who's part of a group called Going Green in Jakarta. And so I gave her a call to ask her how the group had started.
Yeah, so it started actually as a discussion on the wall of the Jakarta Mum Support Group page on Facebook. And I think it was one person had, you know, written up there just how depressed she was feeling that, you know, everything being in the news about the problems with plastic, the problems with ice melting and all of these massive issues. And here she was living in a city where she didn't even know what to do with a plastic bottle, you know, where she could even take it to be recycled. And it obviously touched a chord with lots and lots of people. And, you know, so many, it was such a popular post and so many people commented, you know, I feel exactly the same, I feel really hopeless. But interestingly, lots of people also commented saying, well, actually, I do recycle, or, oh, I make my own soap, or, you know, I've found ways to get groceries without the plastic. And so it was really obvious that there was a lot of, you know, interest and enthusiasm around this area. So she initially had set up a WhatsApp group, you know, adding in everyone who had said they were interested. And within like a day, it was one of these crazy WhatsApp groups where there was like hundreds of messages. And so we thought very quickly, well, this isn't going to work. We should just set up a group. So that's what we did. That's what I did for everyone. And it's called Growing Green in Jakarta. And it's really just taken on a life of its own. So we now have over 2,000 members. A lot of them are expats living in Jakarta, but a lot of them are Indonesians too. And yeah, it's taken on a life of its own. And I think it really has taken off, I think, because there's a lot of, you know, concern and stuff in the news, particularly about plastic. And so a lot of people have maybe joined the group interested to know what they can do about recycling or reducing plastic. But then as a group, we've also kind of matured and, you know, found out more information about even the problems with recycling or the, you know, the opportunities or solutions to do with plastic, but also to do with other issues. So not just being so narrowly focused on that. And so it's become a really vibrant group where we talk about, you know, and share information and ask questions on all kinds, a whole range of environmental issues.
What do you think has been maybe the biggest win of the group? Like, what do you think you've done collectively that's made the biggest impact?
I mean, I really see it first and foremost about being an opportunity to change our own lifestyles and behaviours. And I think, you know, when you think about the global problem to do with the environment, obviously it is all about our own behaviours and lifestyles, really. I mean, you can, you know, there's a big conversation to be had about the role of companies and the role of government. But I think, you know, you can feel a bit helpless as being one individual. But essentially, if you as an individual are still, you know, consuming and living in exactly the same way as if these problems don't exist, then, you know, we can't really be saying that we're part of the solution. And I think what we've really seen in the group is people coming in and then kind of coming in and they find out about recycling, but then they start changing other things in their life too. So maybe before they ever thought of making their own household products, but now they're, you know, testing out things with vinegar and baking soda at home, or they have, you know, started trying to change their diet because they're, you know, they're finding out information on that. So I really think that whilst it can seem like a small difference, but actually this platform that really encourages and motivates people, because you do feel motivated, right, when you see other people on the page that are seem like they're just like you. You know, they're not doing it all perfectly. They're just someone who wants to do things a bit better. And when you see that happening, you kind of think, well, I can do that too. So I think that, you know, made a massive difference. And then there have been other things like, you know, offline, some people have, you know, started going out and grouping together to give talks in schools or at, you know, different expat associations or even in their offices. We've created a website where people are getting access to much more information on products and services. And I think something like that can be a real resource, you know, for people for hopefully for months and years to come. So I think, yeah, getting people motivated and engaged and then starting to make those changes and support the businesses that they spend their money in to make the changes too, I think is possibly where, you know, a group like ours has the biggest impact.
That's incredible. And all because of one woman who wrote a post about being frustrated.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's that lovely sense of, you know, like, you know, the way that when you land in a new country where you don't have
friends and family and you're not just so settled in the way you've always done things, often it's a good opportunity to make those changes in your life, even though you, because you're in a new country and you don't speak the language and you don't, you're still working out how things happen, it might seem difficult. How are you going to make those changes? But I think that it opens up a whole world of new opportunities. And I think, yeah, that's really where we've kind of been able to pull together a lot of like people who are feeling and, you know, living in the same kind of situation.
And do you feel that there's hope in Jakarta? Like, I know I was in Bali in July and I was really impressed that they were trying to go plastic free, which is such a huge change, you know, because that is one of the things, if you've lived in Indonesia, you see just plastic bags absolutely everywhere. Do you know, there's no incentive of maybe in other countries where you no longer have plastic bags at the supermarket or anything. It seems that everything is given to you in a plastic bag in Jakarta. Yeah. Have you noticed changes like that happening?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, again, it often happens in small pockets. And I think just going back to kind of from the perspective of someone coming new to a country, you can often come in and you're really overwhelmed by, you know, if the rivers are polluted and your neighbours are burning their rubbish, and like you say, everything is, you know, even double wrapped or triple wrapped in plastic, you know, bananas being unwrapped and rewrapped in plastic, and it can feel really demotivating. But I think as well, it's you know, being part of a group like Going Green in Jakarta is a real lesson that, you know, coming into a place, often there's much more happening than you might think. And that because of the language barrier, even, you know, in Indonesia, not many people really speak English, you know, so as in it's Indonesian is very much, you know, the common language. And so, you know, if you're just doing a Google search online, looking for organizations or campaigns or companies, and you're looking for it in English, you're not going to find it. And so I think, you know, part of the brilliant thing about this group is that along the way, we've, you know, from our perspective, uncovered all of these brilliant organizations or campaigns or social enterprises that are, you know, have lots of really innovative things that they're doing. Everything from, you know, there's a really cool organization that supports families who live on the massive landfill site in Jakarta to do upcycling, you know, so they take out the plastic that they can use, clean it up and make products with it. There's another, you know, really cool organization that's doing a lot on trying to improve waste management, and doing that by kind of going into local residential areas and providing them with a solution other than waste burning, but then also offering that same service to businesses and, you know, other organizations. There is a lot happening, or, you know, there are activists out there, you know, working hard on these issues. I mean, even in Kalimantan at the moment, where the forests are burning, there are Indonesian volunteers risking their lives going in to save orangutans and put out the fires. You know, so it would be a huge injustice to those people and organizations doing the heavy lifting on this in a country where it is really difficult and the scale of the problem is enormous, to not give them the recognition. And then I think what we can do as kind of outsiders is give them our support. So be that connecting, you know, that social enterprise to a new market, you know, connecting them to people who might want to buy their products, or, you know, sell them at the school bazaar, or, you know, or if you have skills and you're not working, maybe you're not allowed to work in the country that you're in, you know, using those skills, whether that be marketing or design or management or social media, to help these organizations, you know, develop their ways of working or reach new audiences. So there can be a really important role and useful role, I think, that you can play as an outsider coming into a country on these issues, even though it can often feel, like you say, quite overwhelming.
Well, that's fantastic. I love the whole thing, from little things, big things can grow. Like it started from a post. Like, and I also like that the group that she's involved with is a crossover between expats and locals, because I really think that's important for location-based stuff. And it doesn't always necessarily happen because there's language and cultural barriers. But you really want to be seen as everyone who lives there working together. You don't want to be seen, I imagine, as imposing your own ideas and views on another location and creating some sort of cultural clash.
Yeah, and that was it, because that I think that was the biggest point for me was, yes, you know, that one person made a post and then this group of 2,000 people came, but yes, that the group had both Indonesian and expats in it. But when she said, you know, chances are you're searching for things in English and you're not going to find, you know, the answers that you're looking for, and that you have to give credit to all the local people who are really making an effort and really doing great things. And just because you don't see them in your expat world,
yes,
it doesn't mean they're not happening. And I think that's what I was trying to say before is, you know, like you mentioned the article about Qatar, Nikki, there are, you know, Qatar cops a lot of flack because, yes, it is a major hub. You know, it's the world's, I think, greatest supplier of liquefied natural gas. And yes, there are, you know, terrible things here that happen in that regard. But let's not forget all the great Qataris that are starting those groups and making those things happen, and that that's how you can turn a negative into a positive, to go and find those people and seek out those people and join those groups so that you do feel like you're making a difference. So next up, I spoke to Susan, another remarkable woman. She's based in Ningbo, China.
I'm in Ningbo, China now. Mm-hmm. So, of course, the pollution is horrendous in China, and we see that they're trying to make a movement towards working with waste reduction, teaching people to recycle, but it's a long process. So I'm just trying to help people learn what they can do in the meantime, and that every little bit makes a difference. And really, I was super motivated by caring for the environment when we lived in Malaysia during a big haze issue about 4 years ago. And that's happening again now. And really started to think about my consumption. So we started doing a number of things. One of the big ones was apartment composting. So we have a bokashi bucket, and we have vermiculture as well now, which is composting with worms. And we do that right in our apartment on our balcony.
Yeah. And then what do you do with that compost? If you're in the apartment and you've, you know, I'm a composter at our house in Australia, and it goes onto the garden. But what do you do with it in your apartment?
Well, we're particularly lucky because my husband's at a university where he's been a part of starting a community garden. So we take it out there. But I encourage my friends to either drop it off to us and we'll do the same, or, you know, they really can use a lot of it for their own houseplant and just dump it in the gardens outside.
Yeah. That's right. I guess it doesn't have to be your garden. You can dump it into anyone's garden, can't you?
Yeah, exactly. And especially the vermiculture makes a beautiful soil. So it's not like you're dumping compost that's not quite finished or anything like that.
Now, is this something you had to hand carry back into China with you, or were you able to source the composting materials there?
China is actually really great because they have everything on a shopping network called Taobao. So yeah, we even bought our worms online and they got delivered to our door. So that was really great.
Via WePay, I imagine?
Exactly. and so that's a big waste contributor as well, the amount of things that are getting delivered every day and the unbelievable amount of takeout food these days and people with their plastic containers. So I carry my containers with me everywhere. I was at an Indian restaurant last week and knew we'd have leftovers, so I brought my own containers for that. People know me for for bringing all my own stuff, my own produce bags to the local market. I teach people in the fruit shop when they're asking me what I'm doing, you know, why I want to bring my own bags and not use the plastic anymore. And most people are very receptive to it, although they don't think that they would do it. They all say they're too lazy, but it's about changing habit. There's a growing little group of vegans and vegetarians in town. So there's a few little vegetarian restaurants that know us all, and they, again, will do the same thing. We can drop off our containers and then just do a back and forth all the time with them.
A lot of what you've talked about is what you've done personally. Have you been able to join a group or start a group in China?
Yeah, so of course, because of WeChat, we have a WeChat group called Eco Ningbo, and I actually went on there the other day and asked, you know, there's 120 people in this group. do you find that it helps you in any way? And I got some answers back, and they said, yeah, because I feel like I'm being held accountable by the 120 other people in this group. They get a lot of tips. Some people like me, I sometimes think that all my posts don't do much, but they do say that I've been influencing to them. The other thing that I've done with a group of four other people is start something called Plants for the Planet. And that was our initial big thing was an EcoFest on the university campus. And we got the students involved. They have an eco group called Notting Green. The university is the University of Nottingham. And they joined us, and we created a festival on campus where we tried to be low to zero waste. We got the international schools involved, and they came with their own booths teaching ocean conservation, for example. And while they were doing that, they were selling reusable straws. We got the companies that were coming in for food to bring containers that people could reuse or that could be broken down very easily in compost. So it was a good start for us. We're starting small, but we had a huge turnout that day, which was wonderful.
What would your advice be to someone who's a new expat somewhere and they're feeling despondent or that there's nothing they can do or that what they do won't personally make a difference?
So it is to kind of seek out some like-minded people, start off by leading by example, bringing your own things to a restaurant, using your own napkins. That's another thing I do. Just do something small. And then people often ask what you're doing. Picking up garbage.
Yes.
People want to know what you're doing.
Yes.
And it starts that curiosity. And, you know, as soon as you are in an expat situation, you're going to meet people who are interested in doing what you're doing.
Yes.
For example, we have a ladies' lunch once a month. And so I spoke one day about all the things that I was doing. I did a little presentation. And it started people going.
Yeah, again, so inspiring. All the personal things, so it might not be, again, what you are aware of, but learning how other people do things. So Echo Ningbo, I belong to a group called Sustainable Hamburg, and they talk about all sorts of things I'd never thought of and the pros and cons of how to get them and what to do. And the last thing I saw was a post about stainless steel pegs. I thought, that seems quite straightforward, but something I never really thought of. To me, pegs have always been plastic. Not that I'm using pegs right now because I'm apartment living, but it was just one of those things. So when you belong to one of those groups, it's just what you see as a bystander that helps sort of reiterate to you these amazing changes you can make if you make them yourself, just small changes.
That's right. And if once you start having those discussions, everything starts to pop up into your head. Do you know you can't go shopping without thinking about it? I mean, I have spent this week talking to so many environmental expats or environmentally friendly expats, I should say. And they do, you're so bang on, Nikki. If you don't think about it, you just keep doing it until someone mentions it, and then you might think about changing. Susan also mentioned challenging herself not to buy any clothing for a year. She's just gone for a complete year of not buying anything new. Now, if anyone didn't catch what Susan said she was using for her compost, it's a Bokashi bucket that she uses for composting. And I have a girlfriend, an Australian girlfriend, who hand carried her Bokashi bucket back from Australia along with her worms that she needed for it from Australia. So she bought her worms in Australia and she hand carried them through and she declared them at customs here. She said they kept sending her to about six different people, like the way she kept saying, these are my worms, they're for my composting bucket. And she said eventually by the sixth guy, he just said, oh, just go.
But can I just say, if you tried to take worms into Australia, No.
Well, you don't need to take worms into Australia.
Because they have them there.
Yes. But I thought, so I have a Bokashi bucket coming my way. I'm very lucky. This particular friend, her husband's a pilot. So he he has access to getting things in and out easily. Because I was like, are you sure they're going to have space? And then I clicked, oh, yes, pilots have plenty of space.
Will he be bringing you more worms, or will you be sharing worms?
I don't know what happens with the worms. I think I'm going to have to BYO my own worms. Now, my environmentally friendly son did point out, Mum, do you need to check that you're not causing some problem to the environment here in Qatar with those Australian worms?
Yeah.
You know, a bit like the Libyan mice that I took to Canada that would have been cold and didn't understand the language. Like, will these worms get here? But I think your worms stay in your bokashi bucket, as far as I know.
They don't get out.
No, they're regionalized.
Another person who posted and has posted sort of a few times recently, as these things have become up more often, is Kate. And Kate is Irish, and she lives now in Australia as a migrant. She lives in northern Queensland beside the Daintree Forest. And she has brought up that, you know, she's Irish, and so she does travel home from time to time. And so traveling by air is a large impact on the environment. And she has taken up a cause to plant trees. So she and her family plant trees in the Daintree. And I spoke to her very early in the morning, her time, and all I could hear were these wonderful birds. And like, it just sounded like she's living right in the middle of a forest. I don't know how close she is, but it was just so amazing. She is aware of their carbon emission, and they offset it by belonging to an organization called Rainforest Rescue. And I'll put the Rainforest Rescue link in the show notes. It's a great organization, and it raises money and then buys back parts of the rainforest that have been used for other things, and then also does a lot of replanting.
Mm. And I think planting a tree somewhere is such a fantastic idea for an expat too, in that you are making your mark somewhere. I'd love to talk to Kate again about sort of making your mark in that way, in that, you know, I had a friend recently who planted two trees down at the beach. He saw these particular trees on a holiday, and then he thought they would do really well. So he's not doing anything illegal here because he's staying within the country. But he planted and he bought these two trees down to the beach. And I thought later, God, I've got to ask him where he planted them so that I remember that they're there, because this guy's a lot older than me. I'm not saying he's about to croak anytime soon, but I thought, you know, it'd be great to have a reference to go back to sort of 25 years later to go back and look at those trees. And I think the same as an expat. Like, imagine if you're, at least when you go, you know what you've left behind. So often we're in, as expats, we're in rental homes, or everything's so very temporary. You know, the schools change, the teachers change, the principals change, our work changes, everything. So to leave something like a tree behind is a kind of nifty thing that you could take a photo of, and maybe someone else could go back and have a look at later on. I don't know. It's probably me and my nostalgic, you know, you know, melancholy attitude to life. But I just thought it was a really lovely thing to make your mark.
And the other thing that Kate does is with her family, though, so they, when they're out walking, they pick up seedlings and they take them home and tend to them. And then at the end of the year, they give them to teachers as presents and say, you know, thank you for helping me grow. That kind of thing. So as well as contributing to the Daintree, they're also just contributing to general tree planting and growth. So I think that's great. Kate also told me about an amazing podcast, which I'm going to talk about in my three favorite things, but I think everyone should listen to an episode of it this week.
Okay. Now, a quiz that I did with my family this week was something that one of our listeners put in the Two Fat Expats Facebook group in the conversation that we were having about this. And it's a interactive sort of questionnaire that you do on climate change and how we can reduce our carbon footprint. And I think if you go and have a look at it and do it with your family, it might really surprise you. You basically rate things, you know, 1 to 5 of what you think will reduce, make the biggest reductions. And there's some really interesting things there. If you're not into doing the quiz, you can also find really similar info that has pretty much the same answers, but it's just in like a little summary guide, and that's in drawdown.org. And I'll put a link to both of those things on our website and in our show notes. Really good conversations when people were saying, well, what can you do? What can you change? Someone said, well, vote well and engage with civic action. You have to hold your political leaders of your home country accountable. And I think that's probably, you know, number one on the list.
If you can vote, that's the thing. And congratulations to Canadian expats everywhere who've recently regained the ability to vote. So go you. Go Canadians.
All of that. That's a great little I spy with my little expat eye, Nikki, that Canadians can now vote. Well done. Jean McKay said that she's in Indonesia. She's actually a conservation biologist living and working there. She said a few things she's tried recently are zero waste. There's been this whole conversation about how it's almost like we've gone past recycling now, that we need to move on, that now that everybody's recycling, that's great, but maybe what we need to really think about is upcycling and having zero waste, because we really want to reduce the amount of plastic that we have.
Yeah, I found that interesting to see that recycling is the last thing you should be doing.
Absolutely.
Because you shouldn't be actually having stuff to go in the recycling.
Exactly. And if you're not thinking about it, like, for instance, I went to the shop yesterday and we were at the last shop before we were coming home. And my son and I both went, oh, I'm really thirsty. I'd love to grab a drink. And we stood in front of the, you know, drink thing, and they had glass bottles of soft drink, or you could have a plastic bottle of, you know, juice or whatever. And my son said, well, I guess we should probably choose the glass bottle because that's better than using the plastic. And then I said to him, you know what, we are 5 minutes from home. I reckon we can wait 5 minutes, you know, to get a drink. And he was like, yeah. And because we really were, that was the very last stop walking out of the supermarket going. But it's just stupid, tiny little things. You know, if you did that every time you were 5 minutes from home and really thought about, well, no, I can probably just wait and go home and have, you know, make myself something in a cup that I will wash and put back in the cupboard, you know, tiny things. But if you're not in the headspace of thinking about it, you just do things without thinking, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. And or because everyone else is, just because that's what's happening around you.
Yeah.
I totally, totally agree.
Yeah. So separating your good trash for local collectors so that they can find it easy to find. Glass bottles go to a local NGO that turns into funky items for resale. She speaks at her child's school, and she said that she's got the most inspiring audience ever when talking to the kids at school. Eliminating plastic wrap for storage, and what she means by that is you get rid of all that cling wrap. I saw that someone in our group took a photo saying, this is the last of my cling wrap that I'm using, because they now use silicone pockets or beeswax wraps that they have. Take your own grocery bags to the store, which is something Australians have had to do for a few years now. You have to buy plastic bags and be publicly shamed if you forget to take your own grocery bag to the store. Bringing cardboard box egg cartons to the shops to buy eggs individually instead of buying them pre-packaged. She'd also suggested local food producers, sustainable clothing manufacturers like Bamboo, and attending clothes swaps. She had really great ideas. Nikki, I'm going to put all of these ideas into a checklist so that people can see all the great things that everyone mentioned in the one spot.
A few weeks ago, James argued that asking people to recycle and stop buying plastic packs would not have the desired environmental impact. The only way was to ban the manufacture of single-use plastic, or maybe all plastics, except for those technical reasons that can't be substituted. So, and he shared a link to a documentary by Coca-Cola highlighting the same idea. So maybe start petitioning for companies to stop making single-use plastics. So we can also add that link to the show notes.
Yeah, it's a little YouTube link, isn't it? Called Coca-Cola's Plastic Secrets.
And then Jen Jones said what I obviously had read Jen Jones' comment, and it was reflecting in my mind that recycling should be the last thing that we do. Reduce and reuse comes first. And as she says, a lot of recycling programs are a joke. Mm. They get collected and then, you know, a lot of people send their recycling to third world countries and then they're just offshoring it. And to do that, they send them on ships, which cause pollution and all sorts of other things. So they're in fact increasing the cycle rather than decreasing the cycle.
I'm amazed by people with zero waste. I have decided that that is going to be our aim for Christmas, because for me, Christmas is the time where it is hideous, right? That you, I don't know about you, Nikki, with your Christmases, but I know when we go down to the beach, you know, everyone's looking in everybody's bins for bin space. You know, can I put a little bit in your bin? Because we've got so much. And, you know, it's like when opening presents and all that wrapping paper just gets shoved in a great big garbage bag that then gets thrown outside, you know, all for 45 minutes of the morning where everybody wrapped it open. So I'm really going to campaign hard for our family to try and do zero waste. And I've been thinking about all the ways that we could do that. All right, Maria Atkins was another one. She said it's a subject dear to her heart as well. She's using fabric bags when she goes shopping. She uses net bags for loose sort of fruit and veg, reducing consumption of single-use plastics as much as possible, not buying takeaway, tea, coffee and water, using your own cup and bottle, buying secondhand clothes, buying pre-loved stuff in general whenever she can. Oh, I'm trying to think, we're not using the aircon or the heating unless absolutely necessary. And for those in the Middle East, yeah, that's a big one of, you know, okay, maybe you've got to have your aircon when it's 50 degrees, but maybe you don't need to have it on in every single room. Maybe you can sort of close a door in a few of them and save the world in your own special way. Joining every organised beach bush cleanup she can find. And that was one, Nikki, I hadn't really thought, like I see all the cleanups, but you don't realise like how much of that waste that's lying around ends up in the ocean.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I have a friend in South Africa who joins all the beach cleanups all the time and then often takes her family for just random spot beach cleanups herself. And I always think, good on you, Steph. Great job.
But we all should be picking up litter whenever we can. You know, yeah. Such a small thing. And we get taught it as kids. Well, I know as I was a kid, you did, you know, you're always having, you know, the, what was that day called? The big cleanup, you know, we had the tidy
cleanup Australia Day.
Australia Day. That's right. And then something happens, you know, maybe, and that's, I guess that's why this is an expat issue too, of you can take your good habits wherever you go. You don't have to. I think sometimes as expats, we use it as a bit of an excuse. Oh, well, no one else does it here, so I haven't been doing it here either. Okay. Maria also said she replaces sponges and scourers in the kitchen for more eco alternatives. She makes her own soap, reduces consumption of meat products. I have started using those little chalky tablets to brush my teeth instead of using toothpaste in a tube. Have you given those a try, Nikki?
I have not. You might have seen by the look on my face that I scrumbled up my nose. I haven't, but I'm open to it.
Well, I bought mine at Lush and you can buy them in bulk, you know, so it gets rid of the whole waste of the tube. But they're almost like a charcoal, baking sort of soda mix. But you do, right. You just put a little tablet in and chew your little black piece of chalky stuff and it all froths up in your mouth. And, yes, it does. It does all the things that toothpaste do. You maybe don't get the minty, minty fresh, but you definitely have clean teeth and fresh breath.
It has a minty flavour then, does it?
It does a bit, but, you know, I have been thinking I need to see if I can make my own. And maybe if I can make my own and I can make it better.
Oh, my God.
I know. I was thinking if I can make my own and make it better, I've got a business to come because, not so tasty.
But it's what you're used to. You feel that toothpaste should be minty because for the last X number of years, you've brushed your mouth with something, then it leaves a minty taste. It's just one of those things we're getting used to.
Now, were you telling me that your Willow uses something as well? She doesn't use toothpaste in a tube?
No, she doesn't use toothpaste in a tube, not for environmental reasons, I'm afraid to say. But she came up with the idea that she'd like her teeth to be whiter, and because she's 13, I said, I don't think we need to have those professionally done. So she found on Amazon some charcoal toothpaste stuff, and so it's like a powder, and she dips a toothbrush in and brushes her teeth with the charcoal powder. But it does come in a plastic tub, so we're not saving the environment there, I'm afraid. But we will look at, now I know that they come in these small tablets from Lush, I'm sure I can get her on board with that.
Yes,
as well.
And just stay tuned for my own new brand that I'll be coming out with. Yes. Oh dear.
And of course, if you're a lady, Julia mentioned that menstrual cups are also great for cutting down on period waste. Using hankies instead of tissues. Hankies, that's such an old-fashioned term to me. And the handkerchief and rags instead of paper towels. She says, my husband thought we couldn't live without paper towels, so I weaned him with Pandu bamboo washable kitchen towels. So she weaned him. She saw a problem and she fixed it. Good on you, Julia.
Those menstrual cups were all the talk. So were period pants and period knickers and things, aren't they? They're just, it must be making a difference to the sales in tampons and pads, because you keep seeing women in women's groups everywhere talking about menstrual cups and period pants. So it's definitely making a change.
Well, if you think about it, it's a huge issue with waste.
Yeah, yeah, and straight down into our drains. Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah, it is. There was one last thing I wanted to show. Someone had put a link to a Facebook group page called Just Little Changes, and there was a great little graphic of there showing the little changes that you can make. But once again, that's on our website, twofatexpats.com. If you go to Expat Greenies episode, you'll find all of this advice there, and we will make a little cheat sheet for you in the future. Okay, Nikki, three favourite things. Now, I have to do a shout out to Miss Shardy for this, the lovely Miss Shardy, who has a blog and a Facebook page and everything else, and she lives out in, where does she call her? In
Bumtruck.
Yeah. Lives out in Bumtruck nowhere. Miss Shardy put on her page that she is a big fan of the, you know, the Mamma Mia podcast. There's a beauty podcast, and someone was talking about this Giorgio Armani foundation that they use that's $89 a tube. And she thought that was probably out of the realms of her budget. And she talked about L'Oreal's True Match Foundation. And I too am, I love my foundation, and I have a favourite Chanel foundation that I really like. But of course, it's not cheap. And I just thought, oh, there has to be something cheaper out there. And I'm kind of digging the True Match, so I'm going to give it a shout out as well. So it cost me all of $10. I bought it down at the local supermarket. And the thing I really liked about it was you could go for your skin color, but you could do like a rose tint or a gold tint. And those of us who are a little bit pink know that we need to do more of a yellow gold tint, or else we end up looking very, very pink. And so I don't have it on right now, Nikki, if you're looking at me thinking, well, I don't know, I don't think it's that good. I am makeup free this morning. But yeah, I would definitely do it as a highly recommend. What's one of your favorite things, Nikki Moffat?
Well, one of my favorite things is the podcast that Kate directed me to, which is called Mothers of Invention. And it's by Mary Robinson, who's the former president of Ireland, and Maeve Higgins, who's an Irish comedian.
Wow.
And they discuss the environment with Mothers of Invention globally. So they say Mothers of Invention is a podcast on feminist climate change solutions from mostly women around the world. And as they point out in their first episode, to be a feminist, you do not have to be a woman. They're very clear about that. But Mary Robinson, who is the former president of Ireland, has become a climate justice evangelist. And she is also a member of the Elders, which is, of course, the group that Nelson Mandela formed several years ago, which is a group of business leaders and ex-politicians or politicians globally that sort of come together and discuss the big issues and try and implement changes around them. So Cade said, you know, they discuss climate justice and have amazing experts from around the world who are pioneering initiatives to combat climate change. It's very optimistic and inspiring, especially with so much bad news around, which I think is also true. You can look at anything from a number of sides, but it's sometimes nice to hear it from the side of the positive, so things that are changing. So the first episode I listened to two episodes, was the very first one, and it introduced the concept and the themes, and it talked about a class action in the Netherlands against the government on not doing enough for climate change. And that group of people actually won. And now globally there are over 1,000 cases against governments about their action or inaction on climate change. And then the other episode I listened to was the most recent one, which was on fashion and climate justice issues. So they looked at all aspects, from those who make it to those who wear it, and the responsibility of everybody along the way. Fashion accounts for 10% of emissions annually globally. So there's a lot that can be done in that space. And they talked about things like the amount of water used to make a shirt, the impact of fast fashion like Zara and H&M and stuff like that. So I loved it. And it's really nicely produced podcasts. They've got all fancy people doing lots of fancy things, and they've got good music and all sorts of things, and great, great interviews. So I highly suggest Mothers of Invention.
Oh, it sounds fantastic.
It's really, really good. And so it's TV, so it's fall season in the States. So all the new TV shows are coming out. One of the new TV shows I've seen on Hulu is called Prodigal Son. It's got Michael Sheen from Masters of Sex and Good Omens and all those great things. Love Michael Sheen.
Yes.
It's got Bellamy Young, who played Melly Grant in Scandal. She's the mother of the star of the show, and who's Tom Paine from Walking Dead. He looked familiar to me, but I wasn't 100% sure of him. But I was just quite interested. So he is born in 1982 in real life, and the people paying his parents were born in 1970 and 1969. So that's how quickly they age you in Hollywood. They immediately, once you're over a certain age, you can be anyone's who's an adult, their parent, which I sort of looked at them, I thought, yeah, I see her playing his mother, and then I thought, well, I wonder how old she is compared to how old he is. And in real life, people, they wouldn't really be mother and son. But it's kind of a mystery, horror, thriller kind of thing, which I wasn't sure if I was going to like, but I've watched two episodes and I think I'll keep watching it. He is the son of Michael Sheen, who is a serial killer and is locked up in a psychiatric hospital. He was sort of involved a little bit when he was 10 and his father was arrested. He sort of worked out what was going on, and it's I'm not spoiling anything to say that he ended up on the side of good, in that he works with the FBI and the police force, et cetera. So, yeah, I think I'm going to like it. And I just recommend it if anyone wants to have a look. It's worth your time for a couple of episodes.
Mm. Okay, I spy with my expat eye. I saw a great article, I think only in the last couple of days, abc.net.au, about open banking and how things are going to be changing come February 21, when the banking industry in Australia becomes a little more open. And the article was sort of geared towards Australians, saying, you know, when you pay that hotel bill overseas and you use your credit card, and then you get the, you know, exchange rate costs, or if you need to transfer money, or if you're using a travel card and then you realize you're being fleeced by the bank on the exchange rates. But this is a big, big thing for expats too, with open banking, in that it's going to change, where they're saying that now with our primary accounts, it's kind of like they're likening it to when telephone numbers became open. Do you know when you used to never change your...
When you could port.
Yes, yeah. Yes, when you wouldn't change because you'd go, oh, no, it's just too hard to go from A provider to B provider because I'll lose my telephone number or whatever. But now you're going to be able to do that a lot with banking. And I think it's a really great article. I'm going to put a link to it once again on the page. But it's sort of, there's a little diagram in there that shows you, you know, how we tend to bank at the moment with our salaries going into one account and then the mortgage being paid or whatever. And it really is sort of maybe a two account system or a two bank system, to show that we will now sort of have a wallet account where these things will go into, and we might do our banking using seven or eight different methods, but it'll be so much easier for us and we will save so much money because of it. I think the interesting side of this too is what this will do to the banking industry in Australia in particular, of if you own shares in a bank, which many people do, or if you have superannuation that's tied up with a particular bank, because bank profits, you would think, are going to reduce.
Yeah, which is always the argument of the bank provides a service, but do you, how profitable do you want it to be? Obviously, if you have superannuation shares, you want it to be very profitable, but if you're a customer, you want, you know, benefits from your service. So if they're making money from you, it's always not the best. So it's that sort of difficult conversation that you always
Absolutely.
Have.
Absolutely.
Okay, that's a good one. All right, so lots to think about this week, lots we've talked about. We'll definitely have all the links that we've talked about on our webpage, which is at www.twofatexpats.com. As Kirsty said, we will be making a checklist in the future that you'll be able to go through and to find all these great ideas that people have commented about. If you would like to tell us what you think about us, Kirsty, I saw we had a one-star review on iTunes this week, and I really wish they'd left a message because I want to know why they gave us one star.
Did we really? I didn't even see that. So did they make a comment?
No, there was no comment. It was just giving a star. So I thought, I'm happy to accept feedback and critical review. So please, if someone could tell us why they gave us one star, that would be fantastic. Otherwise, if you just want to tell us what you think, we'd love for you to give us a review on any podcast app that you listen to. It does help other people find us because it raises us up in the algorithms.
Now, I have to say, Nikki, I went onto iTunes this week because I've been trying to basically empty my laptop of all content, but to make space for more. But I went on and I did see on iTunes there was a new number one, you know, podcast that was out. It was two young women who work in fashion. And I'm sorry, I cannot remember what it's called. I'll come back next week and tell you. But the thing that struck me with this was I was like, wow, these women have just shot to number one and I've, you know, never heard of them. And so I clicked on them and I saw they had released one podcast and were number one in the country. And their one podcast had something like 4,000 reviews. So I was like, who are these women? Anyway, it turns out they're monster big on Instagram, I imagine, probably
on the socials.
And probably both my daughters probably follow them, I imagine. But, yeah, I thought, isn't that a sign of the time? But that basically shows how important it is to get a review and a rating. That's how. It's not the content of how many you've released or, you know, how many people are listening. It's that. It's the impact you make when you hit in that you really do need to have those reviews to be visible. I wonder if it matters, even if it's a one star or a five star.
I think it does matter about the one star or the five star, but I think it's actually the reviews, so the written things that count. I saw someone launch a new podcast and they ran a campaign on the socials to try and get 1,000 reviews in their first 24 hours of the podcast. And
oh.
I thought, go girly, because that's
huge. Well done. Maybe we need to do that. Maybe we need to say to everyone, hey, we want 5 reviews by Friday. I shouldn't be rude. We do very well in reviews. We have done very, very well. I think one of the things that hits us with the Two Fat Expats is we do cross about 60 countries, and so we do pop into lots of different iTunes and podcast apps and wherever. We don't have a singular focus.
That's right.
Yes. So, yes, Nikki, it's been lovely chatting, and I'll talk to you next week.
Speak to you then. Bye-bye.